What is up, Dental Marketer Tribe? How is everybody doing today? As you can kind of tell from my voice, it sounds like it's cracking and, you know, stuff like that. It was weird. I got sick. My throat was really hurting. Then I felt like I was getting better. And I actually was better. I even went to go to do some events, help some clients out. And then I woke up this morning and my voice was almost completely gone. And now I'm like this. And my throat is killing me. So I apologize for this sound that my voice is making. I sound now like I'm 12 years old. If you guys watch the TV show Friends, do you remember the part where Phoebe was sick? And she was sick for, I forgot, a while. And then she was like, she was singing and she liked the way her voice sounded. So she's like, oh man, this chick sounds sexy. So she kept singing like that. She kept trying to get, eventually she got better, but she tried to get sick again because, you know, she wanted that raspy voice again and stuff like that. So she kept trying to get sick. I don't know. I just thought about that right now. No way do I think like that. It's just, if you watch the show, you probably remember that. If you don't, then never mind. So guys, don't forget to sign up below, not sign up, but to get my gift to you. It's a checklist to see how many new patients you should be attracting weekly. A lot of the times I get a lot of questions like, I don't know if I'm attracting enough patients, or I don't know if I have enough new patients in my practice. How many should I be getting? So I just created a checklist, right? That way you know exactly how much, like a roundabout, how much you should mainly be getting, like your main goal. That way you know your ultimate goal of how many new patients you should be getting weekly or in total monthly. So guys, go below in the show notes, click on the custom report. So it's a PDF file. You have to fill it out yourself. Your office manager can fill it out. Or yourself, like I said. And yeah, just it's a checklist pretty much. Just check the boxes, write some information down. And yeah, print it out. And then let me know if you want how many new patients you should be attracting weekly. Or you can just kind of have it there for your next meeting and tell your staff like, hey, we need to shoot for this. Let's start increasing, buffing up our marketing. Or you can say like, guys, we're on track. You know, this is amazing. We're doing good. And things like that. So don't forget to download that free report in the show notes below. What else is going on today in this episode? Oh, one other thing I want to mention. My ground marketing coaching. If you are interested in ground marketing coaching, feel free to contact me. I mainly coach one employee or a specific employee that you have in mind to be a ground marketer. Pretty much do what I do. If you don't know what ground marketing is, just go on my website, thedentalmarketer.site, and it's pretty much all the information on ground marketing there. It's basically guerrilla marketing, old school ways on how to get new patients like on paper immediately. You know what I mean? So that's that. And you know, how to do events or doing events, setting up booths, and you know, creating pipelines, walking into businesses, that stuff. So if you guys are interested, you can either book a free 15-minute consultation with me or go to the coaching page under services. It's the ground marketing coaching under services tab. And then just fill that little report out and then I can give you a call whenever you tell me the best time is. So yeah, that's that. Other than that, guys, this episode is a really, really good episode. We talk with Lisa Weber from Unlock the PPO. She's one of the founders. She mainly works with startups, but she has so much information all about insurance. And we come to a conclusion that, you know, insurance, especially, you know, PPO insurance, it's basically marketing, right? And I like how she puts it in such simple terms. A lot of us get so confused with insurance, but she literally covers everything about insurance. If you should do it, I mean, what kind of insurance you should be doing. It depends on like, hey, are you willing to create a lifetime coupon, you know, for this specific type of, not employee, but patient for your practice and so on. Like she explains it better. I know I'm like not doing justice, especially with my voice. And she dives into what strategies you need to be doing, what strategies you should not do and why. And we also talk about the team, building a really great team for your dental practice. But all in all, this is mainly about insurance and how to handle it, everything. It's everything about insurance. So I'm not going to speak much on it anymore because she is the expert. A lot of you guys know her, Lisa Weber from Unlock the PPO. She has, go to Unlock the PPO, Google it, and then just find out tons and tons of articles and information that can help you out. She is an expert, literally an expert in what she does, and it's amazing. And I'm so happy that she was able to be a guest on this episode. So guys, without further ado, let's see what she's been up to lately.
I started in the finance industry years ago, then went to work in a dental office, managed a large practice, then moving out of the dental world so far as working directly in an office. I'd met online another consultant who was actually the spouse of a dentist, and was she and I had very similar philosophies about practice ownership, we ended up connecting and building a company where we contract and credential and negotiate with insurance carriers. We limit the practice to small offices and focusing on the solo dentist. So I came out of a dental office background with a finance background and kind of put the two of them together and argue with insurance companies professionally, I guess. And then she comes from an ownership mentality, being the spouse of a dentist and having to navigate working with insurance and navigate working with write-offs, and we just kind of combined our efforts together and put together a little company that's gotten quite a bit bigger, and now there's several other companies kind of like ours out there in the world. And
I didn't know that.
And we love what we do.
That's great. How long has Unlock the PPO been out for?
Well, we've had the business together for about 7 years now, and started in our basements. And now we have, we're based out of Colorado, but we have people that are working with us, negotiators and credentialing, people in Chicago and Texas and Colorado and Iowa and in Virginia. So we're across the country. We'll stay relatively small. We still want to remain a kind of a niche business. Sandy and I like to have personal connections with the doctors that we work with, so that's by intention. It's a lot of fun. We work with some fantastic dentists.
That's amazing. And so it's, how many years old is it?
Seven officially, the two of us together. She built a small little business called Drop the PPO, where it was guiding doctors on how to get out of networks. A lot of doctors were, that was a process that she had gone through as the manager of her husband's practice. And back at that point, PPOs were very, very heavy, and the trend was to try to maybe limit participation. So she got into that, and then we actually started looking at it a little bit more comprehensively and looked at doctors, established practice that wanted to add carriers or figure out if they should stay in network or not. We added startups, which I manage the startup side. And so these are doctors that are opening their first practice, typically. And how do you position themselves? How do you position them so that they're not in a position where they're being controlled by the carriers, where they have some control over the process and understanding how much they're gonna write off. So we try to help clean up offices that are maybe a little underwater with insurance participation or putting their toes into it, and then we try to help set up a good foundation for doctors that are just opening their first practices, so that they may build a practice that's not, you know, them running around like a hamster on a wheel without making any money. So it's a owner focused small company where we get to deal directly with with our doctors. Each of them would deal with one of the owners. Again, she works with our established, and I work with our startups, and together we form a pretty good brain.
I love it. I love working with, you know, like where it's family almost, like you're part of their family, you know, or you're creating family.
It's fantastic to see, you know, I love seeing, you know, I tell all my startups when I start with them, you know, when they're about to open their practice. So I might've been working with them for a couple of months, and when they're just about ready to see their first patients, I always say the same thing. I'll always ask them to please take a screenshot of their schedule that week and put it in their bottom of their desk drawer and pull it out and take a look at it again a year from then. And because the difference is when they actually start to where they are at year one is where they can't even imagine that they're going to be in that place. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty fantastic to kind of be part of it. Baby pictures to us are pictures of brand new open practices.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Pretty much.
And you deal with most of startups, right?
Yeah, I deal with all the startups, and then Sandy deals with the established practices. So she'll, you know, look at an established practice and do an analysis, figure out where they're at, look at the cost of participation and what carriers are in the mix, and renegotiate if there's carriers that need to renegotiate, or maybe look at new contracting. A lot of what we do is actually looking at how you contract, because it's not as straightforward as it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
All these carriers are connected, you know, like a web. So it's how do you position a doctor so that they can get the marketing benefit from being a network, but with the least amount of write-off, and looking at if they want to get out of a network. If they want to add a network, what impact is that going to have on their practice? And so she's looking at it globally, just historically, what their patient base is and how participation might impact them. But then she's looking at it, how do they want to build their practice? Everybody's a little bit different. You know, the neat thing about dentistry is everybody's really in a different spot, and it's easy to feel like you have to follow the herd and whoever's the loudest person and giving you advice.
Mm-hmm.
But it may not necessarily match up with the kind of practice you want to build. And so we find it's, you know, a lot of it is just trying to figure out where do you want to live when you go to work every day? What kind of practice do you want to build?
Mm-hmm.
And trying to support them and helping them. And if participation is going to be part of it, how do we help them with that piece in a way that supports their goals? If they want to be a two-chair practice and spend time with that one person from beginning to end, that's not somebody that should sign up with every carrier under the sun. It
mm-hmm.
just shouldn't. And so it's more, and that's one thing that she and I enjoy, and one of the reasons why we chose our business model rather than getting huge, which we have been asked to
mm-hmm.
many, many times, and having a whole lot of people in cubicles, which is a fine business model, but so far as what we're doing, we do want to have that one-on-one with a doctor so that we can find out exactly, you know, in the perfect world, how do you want your practice to be, and then how can we help support that?
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, and so you said you used to work at a dental office before this, right?
I did.
What were you doing?
That was, well, I actually landed into it was an insurance administrator. It was my first full-time job back after having children.
Mm.
And so, you know, I had managed just on the finance end before I went back into the world, and started as an insurance administrator and then ended up, you know, treatment coordinator and managing the practice. And so it was very interesting. Every day was different. Worked with some, you know, two awesome dentists, a husband-wife team, amazing clinicians. And so that was probably the very best place I could have entered into that, the craziness that we call the dental world.
Mm-hmm.
And then I ended up getting recruited into another practice that was looking for a, I actually applied as a business manager because somebody had recommended me to a dentist, and he ended up wanting to have a, he said he'd been trying to hire a chairside and train them to be a communicator, and instead he wanted to see if he might be able to hire a communicator and train them to be a chairside.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really intrigued by that. And so he, you know, surprisingly matched my business manager salary, and I jumped in and just had a blast. And this is somebody that lectures. He's, you know, will remain nameless, but he's nationally, actually around the world known.
Mm-hmm.
Just an amazing, again, amazing clinician and very good man. And I had multiple years working with, you know, patients one at a time, all day in the chair, one patient.
Mm.
And so I got to see, you know, that whole, the broader piece of dentistry in, you know, one side, somebody that participated with insurance and had seven chairs going, and then one side, somebody that would participate with patients that were coming from across the country to see him,
mm-hmm.
one patient at a time. And so, you know, that was a wonderful balance for me, and I had a blast doing both, and then decided to go off on my own.
That's good. That's good stuff. Was it really scary when you decided to go off on your own?
It was nutty. I'm a planner. I live in Excel spreadsheets, if that gives you an idea. I am definitely a planner, and so the decision to jump was a big one. But my decision was to jump was primarily because of lifestyle choices. At that time, the dentist I worked with would not work with another assistant, so there was not the ability to ever have a moment without working, and so that was. That was exciting until my son started going to war and I needed to, you know, head off to do homecomings and send-offs and things like that. So if I wasn't there, the practice didn't, patients weren't seen. And so that was just a little bit more than I thought going forward I would want to continue with. So,
yeah,
so decided it was probably time to manage my own schedule a little bit. Now, of course, I work way more hours now than I did then. So that's pretty much how it is when you own your own business. But it is. It's you know, that each place in my life has been an awesome step to the next place.
And how were you when you decided to go on your own? Were you able? Mm-hmm. Was people? I mean, were you? Did you already have people lined up, like clients and things like that, or no? You just.
No, what I did on my own, it's kind of an offshoot in that there had been a dental office, a friend of mine who I volunteered with at the free clinic, a dentist who had a nice practice, five doctors, and their unscheduled treatment was getting out of control, and then just in conversation, so I, you know, offered to tunnel in and basically schedule his unscheduled treatment, and I enjoyed it, and it worked quite well. So I began a little side business myself, you know, jumped right in and basically did that. I would get phone numbers specific to the area. I'd tunnel into the practice's practice management software, and I would just call patients and schedule unscheduled treatment,
mm-hmm.
And did that for about a year. And so that's what I did. When I stopped working in a dental office, I just jumped in and started scheduling unscheduled treatment remotely.
Mm.
And cleaning up, well, it was just sitting there and also identifying why did patients not come back and giving feedback to the doctors and in that area. So that piece kind of exploded, and it really was just word of mouth. And so I probably would have done that indefinitely if I hadn't been chatting with Sandy, and both of us just felt that this is a piece that we wanted to do. She and I actually formed a legal business partnership before we ever met each other in person.
Oh, wow.
So when somebody says, social media, it's not that big a deal. It's I have one partner in life, my husband, that I've been married to for 34 years, but she is definitely my other partner for life, because we have very, very similar philosophies and just how to approach the ethics of working with doctors, with carriers, and what we the level of services that we want to provide to the doctors that we work with, and so I couldn't have found a perfect match.
That's amazing.
If I tried.
Yeah. And so what's one technique, tactic, strategy, or procedure that you have used or seen increase dental practices profits?
Knowledge of numbers. I would say that one thing that we do find universally, and now that insurance is such a big part of practices' income, whether they participate or not, but particularly if they participate, is that doctors go in blind, not truly knowing what their actual discount is going to be, and then they completely lose track of that process. And they don't lose track of that process with anything else. They know what their lab bills are. They know, how much they're paying on their credit card machine every month. They know their light bill. They know all those pieces, and they notice it. But the write-off piece is a piece that's just one big number that annoys them. But they don't ever look to see it, because it's not weather. It's something that you can control. So they lose control of it. And just assume that this is just how it's going to be. And then they just work harder or longer or add an associate. So I would say the biggest thing is just looking at your numbers. What do you make if a doctor would just look at their reports and look at what are their top 20 codes in production? Those are the codes they want to look at. How much do they charge for those procedures? How much does the carrier allow them to charge if they participate? So what's their true cost of participation? And then do I still need this carrier, or is it even helpful? So it's a huge piece. It's usually the majority for a practice that participates with insurance, with any insurance. It's usually a majority of their income. That's typically 60-70%+ is not uncommon. And it's a piece that they don't look at. And so that's it. Look at your numbers, whether you have somebody else look at your numbers, whether you negotiate your contracts or not. Look at your numbers. It's a huge part of your income. It's a bigger part of your income than your payroll. And it's a piece that, and it's understandable, because dentists is a group. They're usually the smartest one in the room. They always have been. It's very difficult to get into dental school. So, but it's not something that they teach in dental school, the business piece. So, so when they're stuck in the middle of something that is baffling, which insurance is, it's easy just to throw your hands up and feel that you just don't have the ability to control it. But you really do. Just, take some time and look at it and continue to look at it just like you would any other bill. And that's the number one thing. That if we can, we're always asking doctors, just look at your numbers and understand your numbers. And if you don't understand your numbers, ask somebody for help to understand your numbers.
Why do you think most dentists don't look at their numbers?
Because it's not something they're wired to do. It's typically not a piece they've had to do. So the light bill is, this is the light bill, I'm going to pay $179.95, it's gone up, that. Credit card numbers, I'm going to charge this amount, this is the fee I'm going to pay, and if I can find somebody that's going to allow me to pay a lower fee, that's, pretty straightforward. But when you look at a report, if somebody, what typically happens is the doctor may actually try to wade into it, and they'll try to create a report. And it might generate especially if it's dentrix, it might generate a report that's 250 pages long, and it's just overwhelming information. And so rather than trying to step back and break it down and figure out, okay, what are the bullet point pieces of information that I want to pay attention to, not everything. So what's the temperature? What's the barometric pressure? What's the humidity? Basically, what are the bullet point things that I need to look at? And then how can I do anything about that? And so I think that's, you know, doctors look at over 90-day claims. They look at accounts receivable. And they look at a total amount of a write-off. But they don't ever break it down to see, you know, where is this coming from? And can I do something about it?
Mm-hmm.
If you look at PPO participation write-offs as the most expensive marketing a dentist will ever do, that as is never looked at. If it was mailers or flyers or, you know, getting bracelets to hand out at the county fair,
mm-hmm.
those kind of things, doctors know exactly what they spent, they know how many they got, and they know how many patients they got from that effort. Whereas PPO participation, which is 100% marketing, that's all it is, you're pretty much going in blind.
Yeah.
And so if doctors can just step back and look at Guardian as a new patient flyer, how effective is it? Was it worth it? United Healthcare, that's a radio ad. How much did it cost? Was it worth it? And break it down into the value of each of those pieces. And you know, I'll usually suggest to doctors, if you created a coupon that never expired and could be used over and over again, that discounted your fees to this level, would you do it? And if the answer is no, maybe that's a network you might not want to participate with. Maybe you might want to find another way to market to that patient pool.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a huge pot of money. And because it's insurance, and everybody's eyes glaze over when you're thinking about insurance, it just feels too big to wrap your brain around or arms around. And so, you know, the key is just taking it a bite at a time, whether you do it yourself, whether you have somebody else do it. But the key is knowing where the money is going out of your office. If they had to write a check after each appointment for the write-off to the insurance carrier, that they would pay attention to, because it's clear. I just did a procedure that took me 3 hours, and I did it practically for free. Then they would question, should I even still do this with this carrier? But because you see it as a global big dollar amount, it's easier to see how it just feels too big to look at.
Mm-hmm.
So the biggest thing, hands down, know your numbers.
And do you think, like, for example, say Guardian, right? We're in a dental practice that accepts Guardian and Delta and Blue Shield, all this type, right? And then you're kind of looking, and then you think, you know what? Nobody from Guardian's coming in. Do doctors ever say, but what if like one patient might come in next month? Or you know what I mean? Like, you never know, just in case. So that's why we have it. Does that happen a lot?
Yeah, it does. And so the key with that is going to be, what's the cost to participate? So if you have, say for instance, it's a really, really good question. So say, for instance, you have a doctor that doesn't participate with anything at all, nothing, and they want to add, and they have open chair time, and that's the key. If they have open chair time and they don't want to have open chair time, they're not in a position, you know, every doctor is different. We like to look at where they are in their own life. So if they're getting 5 years from retirement and they want to drop to 3 days, open chair time may not be an issue. Consolidating the schedule might be better. But if they have open chair time and they're 30 years old and they've got a whole lot of years with their practice and they've got two empty chairs, then they may be wanting to put in some more patient flow. So then you're going to look at Guardian. So say you only have that one patient that has Guardian. The cost of participation is probably pretty minimal because it's just isolated to that one patient. So if you got a decent fee schedule, and there was an opportunity to perhaps attract more patients with Guardian that may not be coming to you now because you're not in network, the loss to that single patient, so your actual income loss, is pretty minimal. Whereas if a doctor, say, doesn't participate with anything at all and has $200,000 a year in production with MetLife, So they've got patients that are coming in out of network, perfectly happy, and they're getting $200,000 from MetLife every year. So this is a common scenario. And they're thinking, I'm thinking I might want to add MetLife so that I can have more patients. The problem with that, what you want to look at, and what Sandy would look at very carefully, is what's the break-even point? So say MetLife gives you a fee schedule that's going to require a 50% write-off, which is not unusual with MetLife.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now, before you've added a single new patient, you're discounting your current $200,000 a year production by $100,000. Because all of them now are going to be discounted on the new fee schedule. So then you have to ask yourself, will I pick up enough new patients to offset a $100,000 loss to the practice? Likely not.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're looking at adding carriers, you want to look, what's the cost to my current business? And if it's a pretty small cost and you don't have a whole lot of patients with that plan, you may open up the doors to patients that you would not be seeing otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
If you participate with a whole bunch of carriers, then you want to look to see not just how much am I writing off, but how hard is it to work with that network. Carriers are really difficult to work with. Your administrative team's time is lean, and it's really common with an established practice, and it's very important for a startup practice to not have people that are spending their entire time chasing insurance carriers in a circle, because it's totally unproductive time for the practice. So you have to look at how much am I writing off, and how difficult is it to work with this carrier, and how much am I spending of my staff time chasing what may be a low-paying carrier. So if there's a single carrier and there's just the one patient with it and there's not a horrible write-off, you're probably okay. We recommend if you've got a you're participating and you're looking at moving out of network,
mm-hmm.
then you want to take, that's a good one to take. You know, you get your team used to the idea and the conversation of having those out-of-network conversations, and starting with one of the smaller ones is always a better way to start. Starting with a great big carrier, like you would not want to terminate a MetLife or a Cigna or a Delta up front. That's you want to be able to get your front desk where they are comfortable and confident in having that out-of-network conversation. It's super easy to have an in-network conversation.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also super easy for somebody else to discount your income.
Mm-hmm.
So it's great if your front desk person is comfortable and as much as prefers for you to be in-network with everything. But if it impacted their paycheck, and they were discounting their income by 50% in order to maintain that family in network, they might have a different thought process about it.
Mm-hmm. And where can someone go to have or to learn more about how to speak from out of network? You know what I mean? To out of network people.
So if you have a person, somebody that, say, is used to always being in network.
Mm-hmm,
you know, that's
mm-hmm.
always been the conversation. Sometimes actually starting out with them looking at the numbers so that they can see actually how much that discount is for that carrier, and they can kind of understand that this is actually from the doctor's paycheck. And then so far as conversations about insurance, our recommendation is, and of course we don't accept anything from anybody that we refer to. It's just this is, you know, people that we've had good experiences with.
Mm-hmm.
But Teresa Duncan with Odyssey Management is phenomenal, and she's got some good webinar series on her website. She's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Conversations in general, financial terms. Sandy Pardue is also, you know, stellar. And so those are two that we have, you know, personal feedback from doctors on their results. So I think that for that insurance conversation, the in or out of network conversation, anything insurance related, Teresa Duncan is what we would consider the gold standard for that.
Okay. And so what is one strategy, idea, or technique you would never do again, and why?
work for large groups. And that's a trend. You know, the group practices are a big trend nationally. And it's not that, you know, we don't think that they're awesome dentists that work in large groups. Mm-hmm. It's that we do find more dysfunction in the large group practices, and I think a lot of that is just because of very, very fast and rapid and uncontrolled growth where some of the just administrative pieces might have been lost. Mm-hmm. But also we made the decision to focus on solo small dental practices. But the group piece, a lot of small dental offices think that, you know, the big chains have the ability to negotiate better fee schedules, and that's actually the opposite of what we see. It would be highly unusual for me not to end up placing a doctor in a better situation than they currently are in an associateship practice. Mm-hmm. So that's number one. And being all things to all people, knowing what you do best and staying with it. And I think that's probably, and I think that's what a lot of dentists and probably a lot of business owners in general have to find out the hard way is, you know, your impulse to try to help everybody with everything, mm-hmm. can be good, but it also can limit your ability to focus your efforts on what you truly are skilled at. So I would mm-hmm. say that's it. Just taking on quantity versus targeting and trying to spread yourself too thin. So I would say that's, and that's probably universal, and you're probably finding that with your business too.
Yeah, and quality. I'm the same as you. I love it when it's like a family feel with my clients. You know what I mean? As far as like, I feel like I can work with them forever. They can work with me forever. But if it's like, you know, corporations who contact me and they just want to, you know, make it happen, it's kind of a whole different feel. A whole different feel. It's more.
Yeah, we just want to support. I mean, we feel very, very strongly in that business model, and you know, we've and want to support that, and mm-hmm. and our thing is, as if we do not exceed expectations, we're disappointed in ourselves. And okay. So that's pretty much our philosophy, and it's difficult to do that if you spread yourself too thin.
Okay, gotcha. You're right. And so, what's one of the most frustrating things insurance companies do, in your opinion?
I would say the most frustrating thing they do. So the insurance companies are kind of in separate, different groups. There's a contracting, credentialing, negotiating side. That's one part of an insurance carrier. Mm-hmm. The other side of the carrier, on the other side of the wall, and they are kind of walled off, that's the claims side. Fortunately, we don't deal with the claims side. The side that we work with, they're by and large highly skilled professionals. Most of them have worked in dental offices in their past. They know more about office management than the office managers they're dealing with. Mm-hmm. They have no position on whether you get a crown denied or not. They're typically very, very highly professional people. And so you've got this one pocket of people that you're working with. And then once a doctor either comes into network or is attempting to get in network and has paperwork, everything kind of falls apart with a lot of these carriers, mm-hmm. where huge amounts of their work is now being outsourced, and you can't ever get an actual human being to assist you. So doctors that have signed a contract with a carrier and then, say, have a problem or a question a year from then, it's like winding down a maze while somebody's, you know, shooting fireballs at you to try to get an answer for these practices. So the most frustrating thing I would say is truly the dentist support that carriers provide after a doctor has signed up with the network.
It's the piece where,
you know, there's one carrier in particular. It'll remain nameless so that he can remain employed, but this is a senior official in a major national carrier who told me, if we tried to design an insurance carrier that was more inefficient, we could not possibly do it.
Wow.
And that pretty much sums it up.
Jeez. Yeah, I mean, I've seen a lot of people complain, like on, you know, Facebook and things like that, dentists about
right.
their insurance carriers and yes. how it's like, you know, it's not really letting them do what they really, really need to or want to with the patient.
Well, and I think too, you know, in that instance, when an insurance carrier is guiding a patient to a particular procedure through how they reimburse, sometimes the language on their explanation of benefits, the thing that attaches to a payment, I call them fighting words,
mm-hmm.
Where it makes it sound like the doctor did something wrong rather than we just aren't going to pay for it, which is the actual case. And so they insert themselves on the claim side. And again, fortunately, we don't work on the claim side, but they insert themselves, I believe, in the relationship between the doctor and the patient in a place that they don't belong. We had another carrier that shall again remain nameless, where a doctor sent me a copy of a claim payment, and it actually said that the doctor, that it was not necessary, this particular procedure, and it said it should not have been done. And so I spoke to the vice president of that particular insurance carrier and one of their senior managers, who is the one that got it to that level, and basically said, if you use this language on EOBs, prepare to be sued and successfully, because if I were a dentist and I received that, I would be filing a suit today. Because you've done a diagnosis and you've actually argued a diagnosis, and it's probably some 17-year-old who is processing
yeah.
the claim. And the, you know, to her credit, the recruiting manager who I spoke to was horrified. She had absolutely no idea that was going out.
Hmm.
And they did remove that language. But that's an isolated incident, and that there are, you know, countless incidences. Every single doctor has had one where the language on a claim of denial has made it sound not just that that patient doesn't have that benefit, but that the doctor shouldn't have done that.
Mm-hmm.
And makes it, or that the doctor overcharged them, and those are things I think are typically what has earned insurance carriers the reputation that they get with doctors. You know, when we're dealing with doctors, with the insurance carriers, we take the position that, you know, we're not adversaries, because the people that we're working with, again, they have no control over a claim that's denied.
Mm-hmm.
We just want to put them in a position that where they have the best possible setup for their own individual contracts. And
mm-hmm.
and you know, the reps that we work with are of the same mind. It's just one that tips on into the claim side, sometimes it can get a little bit hairy.
Yeah, no, yeah, I completely understand. And so what is the best piece of advice you have ever received that can help my listeners simplify, accelerate, or completely change their practice in a positive way?
The words you just used, change their practice in a positive way. I would say identify if they're a current practice owner. At the end of a day that was awesome,
mm-hmm.
you didn't know how it went, you had lunch on time, you looked at your production report, and you were thinking, wow, I didn't realize I was that busy today.
Mm-hmm.
Everything seemed to hum. Ask your front desk to take a copy of that schedule and figure out, how did it happen? This is how you want to practice. You were profitable with less stress, everything worked out well, and you made more money than you expected. How did that happen? It's easy to look at the schedules that fall apart, you know, or, you know, that's where insurance can sometimes come into play. You feel like, I worked, and I can't believe this is all I'm going to get.
Mm-hmm.
Figure out why that is. Why did that happen? How did that happen? Can we do something about that? So that's the main thing. Figure out how can I make my practice better? And the best way to do that is figure out, where is my practice today? And where do I want to be?
Mm-hmm.
And how do I control that? And so where is the goal? In a perfect world, I think too many times dentists assume that they're stuck in the place that they're at, and or assume that this crazy idea that they had of how they want to do their practice doesn't make sense because their colleagues have told them it doesn't make sense. Maybe step back and figure out, this is how I want my life to be, because they spend more time in their practice probably than they do at home.
Mm-hmm.
And what do I do to build that? And don't hire poor communicators that can't spell and that you'll have to replace every 7 months, please.
No, yeah.
Because they're, you know, sometimes you're better off with not a single person on staff. If you have somebody that is making you miserable when you go into work every day.
Yeah, because that's like you said, it's your home. You don't want to come home and then, you know, just have a horrible culture in there. And, you know, I've dealt with that. I've dealt with where I've had to go into a dental practice and you feel that energy. It's just like all this negative energy and you're kind of
You
like,
know it when you feel it. And
yeah.
if the doctor walks in and then as they're driving to the office and they're thinking, oh my gosh. Or they're having to have that conversation with that front desk person or the assistant or their hygienist or their associate, and they're thinking, oh, I dread this. You know, maybe, you know, something needs to change. I think too often dentists are the most non-confrontational people on the planet. They, you know, I've heard lots and lots and lots of different managers say, you know, where the doctor has said, well, I can't do this because she won't let me or he won't let me, their manager. And that's really truly how they feel. And so my thing is it's your checkbook, it's your business, it's your retirement.
Yeah.
And so it truly has to be, you know, identify the things that grab your gut and make you not happy to go to work and shed them and enhance the things that make you glad you chose to be a dentist.
Exactly. Alrighty, Lisa, thank you so much for being with us. It was a pleasure.
My pleasure. It was great talking to you.
Yeah, but before we say goodbye, tell us where it is we can find you.
Oh, Unlock the PPO. So it's www.unlockthePPO.com. We got a whole bunch of stuff in there that people can just read. A lot of easy, free tips that might help too.
Okay, awesome. And all that will be in the show notes below. Thank you once again, Lisa, for being with us. It was a pleasure, and we'll hear from you soon.
Thanks. Bye-bye, Michael.
And scene. The voice is back, guys. The voice is back. Thank you so much for tuning into that episode. Like I told you, jam-packed with so much knowledge on insurance. If you guys want to know more about how she can help you out, just honestly contact her. Go to Unlock the PPO and see how she can help you out. And she will help you out in any which way form. Thank you guys. Excuse me. Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode. Thank you, Lisa Weber, for being on this episode. She is a very, very busy person. So I was very happy that she was able to get some time out of her day to be interviewed. And yeah, guys, like I said, please contact her. Talk to her with any questions you have. And I know you have a lot of insurance questions because you asked me some of them and I have no idea, to be honest with you, what to do. So I refer you guys to, you know, people like Lisa Weber or Teresa Duncan, like we mentioned. So guys, please be sure to contact her. And yeah, that's about it. Don't forget about the gift that I'm giving you guys. It's in the show notes below. How many new patients should you be attracting weekly or monthly? Just download the free custom report and figure out. And then also don't forget about my ground marketing coaching. Guys, I really, really, really want to help you out as much as possible. And if you feel like, you know what, I'm doing all this digital marketing, but it's only doing so much or it's not even doing anything at all. Let's try ground marketing, okay? Because ground marketing is literally your employee going out there in real time and getting these new patients, setting up in these places, in these setting up in booths or setting up meetings at, you know, back to school daycares or maybe setting up at school district benefits fairs, you know, and you're signing up these new patients, right? So I teach your employee how to find those, how to get those events, how to just go into businesses. Like if you listen to my Monday morning marketing, you can find out like how you can just walk into Starbucks or a restaurant or whatever and just start attracting new patients then. So I teach this so you can, you know, start attracting new patients in real time and immediately. And so yeah, guys, don't forget about that. Just book a free 15-minute consultation with me if you want to know more about it, or just go on the dentalmarketer.site and then go under the services tab and then just find ground marketing coaching and boom, there you go. You can just fill out the little form and I will call you to see when we can get this started. So yeah, guys, with that being said, thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to follow me on Facebook and Instagram. The name is The Dental Marketer. And guys, I'll talk to you soon.